Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
From Geico Subconscious News, I'm Tammy Racing Thoughts, broadcasting from your brain. Tonight's top worry: if something happens to your apartment and you need to, like, stay in a hotel and pay for it, that would be crazy, right? Art Palpitations has more.
That would be crazy, Tammy, but you got surprisingly affordable renter's insurance through Geico, so it could be covered, giving you peace of mind.
Aw, I love a story that ends well.
Next up, love stories. Are they all they're cracked up to be?
It feels good to worry less. It feels good to Geico.
Merkle Media.
Good, everybody. This is Joel Thomas from Free the Rabbits. And how are all the free range rabbits doing out there today? I appreciate every single one of you that's been riding with the show, whether you've been here from the beginning or you're just now tuning in. If you haven't already, take a second to follow the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It makes a bigger difference than most people realize. And if the episodes have been connecting with you, drop a 5-star rating, or even better, leave a written review on Apple. That's how this message keeps spreading. If you're new, just lock in for this one. And if it hits, you already know what to do after. Also, for everyone who's asked, yeah, that's me on the intro and outro music. You can find all my work by searching Joel Thomas on Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube, wherever you listen. If you want to go a step further and support the show, you can hit me at buymeacoffee.com/freetherabbits for memberships or one-time support, or tap into YouTube memberships with the exclusive tiers and custom emojis. But honestly, even just listening, sharing, and being here is just as important. So I appreciate you. And real quick, the shop just got updated. We just dropped brand new Free the Rabbits pulp art style conspiracy tees, along with the official Isaac and Joel's Quarter Quell logo tees, all live right now. That's over at freetherabbits.myshopify.com. Go check it out. All right, let's get into it. What's good, guys? We are back with part 3 of our Occult Mafia series we've been going through, and we've been tracking all the way back to the Templars and really even further back to the Manichaeans, which we discovered in the last episode. But this Gnostic road that goes all the way down into the Sicilia Mafia, which you're going to discover the Sicilia Mafia today. We're going to talk about Giuseppe Mazzini today, and we're definitely going to get into the Jacobins because they're a central part of this, because they tie in Mazzini and several other characters into the Sicilia Mafia. But you'll see the ties of the Jacobins and the Dominicans. We'll see some ties into some different Inquisitions, including the Spanish Inquisition, which we've been talking about too. So all of these different threads actually tie together, and you'll see how the roots of the modern day mafias, how they get all of what they have built their foundations on with a lot of these different secret societies and these Gnostic orders. And we're going to talk about Mazzini today and how he had direct British backing and how that he was showcasing himself to be this liberator of the people. And if you even go on Wikipedia or any of these places, they tout him as a revolutionary. But the reality is, he was the first godfather of the Sicilia Mafia, as we're going to discover today. He was the originator of the word mafia as well, as we're also going to discover today. And we're going to talk about his Young Italy network and what it was, kind of a precursor to the Sicilia Mafia, but also an offshoot of the Camorra, which we talked about in the last episode, which was an offshoot of the Gardunia before it. So all of these different things that we've been talking about in the last couple of episodes will come to even more fruition today as we really dig into who Mazzini was. But to even get to that, we want to talk about the Jacobins and the Jacobins, or the Society of the Friends of the Constitution. And they were renamed the Society of the Jacobins, Friends of Freedom and Equality. And this was after 1792. And they were commonly known as the Jacobin Club around them. And they were one of the most influential political clubs during the French Revolution of 1789. So you will see when we get to Mazzini how that he was a integral part of trying to start these different revolutions and how that they would fail. Some of them wouldn't fail and he would succeed. But really, they were to create chaos, and it wasn't so much about winning or to actually have an actual revolution where the people would take the power away from the people who didn't need it. No, no, no. The people in power were actually stirring it up and causing it, because the British, as we'll showcase later on, who were actually paying Giuseppe Mazzini and several others, they were trying to keep their grasp on the world at that time, and they didn't want some of these countries to have a independence or freedom away from them. And what they would do, they would cause these seemingly good things on the outside. Hey, the people are fighting back, but they were actually funding these things because it caused the chaos and it allowed them to keep their power in place. And Giuseppe Mazzini was a big part of that. And we talk about these mafias even into the United States with the American Italian mafias. And they were a big part of what was going on down in Cuba with all of that craziness, especially when Cuba kicked out the gambling organizations that the mafia had a lot of money into. So then the mafia started getting in bed with the CIA. You're going to see this a lot with the mafias. They are always in bed with the political regimes around them. And this is no different. And this is the first actual godfather that we would consider to be the godfather. Obviously, we've already proven that the Grand Master, which we see in secret societies, was the precursor to the godfather. But the godfather really doesn't show up until the Sicilia Mafia happens, which we're going to talk about today. Now, the Order of Preachers, or the Dominican Order. Now, we have to get to kind of where the Jacobins came from and what they were an offshoot of. And the Dominicans don't like to claim this at all. And this is the Dominican order, by the way, just so we're clear of what I mean by Dominicans here. Now, the Order of Preachers, or the Dominican Order, it's a Catholic order of the pontifical rite that was founded in France by priest Dominic de Guzman. And we're going to get into Guzman here in a minute. But members of the order, They're also known as Dominicans, and they generally display an OP after their names, and that stands for Ordo Predicatorum, which means Order of the Preachers. Now, it was founded on the outside as a group that was going to preach the gospel and oppose heresies. And this was during the Middle Ages. And you'll see that there were many different theologians throughout history that came through this group. And it's interesting, the order is headed by what they call the master of the order. So again, we have this idea of the Grand Master. So, and we'll discover a little bit about what the Dominicans believe too. It's very Gnostic, so this will make a whole lot of sense. Now, we were just talking about how the order was founded in France by Dominique de Guzman. Now, de Guzman is also considered the patron saint of astronomers and natural scientists. And he's also accredited for spreading and popularizing the rosary. And we're going to talk about the rosary here in a second, too. Now, he was later known as Saint Dominic. And when he first started the order in 1206, it was only for women. And then in 1215, they brought men in. Now, what Saint Dominic set out to do was to establish a Catholic order that would revive, check this out now, the Benedictine order and their idea of dedication in systematic education. So, who were the Benedictines? We already talked about that. From the Benedictines branched out pretty much everything from the Knights Hospitaller, then the Knights Templars, and we know of the Cistercians, which also came out of that, and the Knights Malta. All these are precursors to what we're getting to now, but this is also what the Dominicans were trying to do. They were trying to revive this order of the Benedictines. So clearly they're going to have some Gnostic viewpoints that are intertwined all within this Catholic order. Also, what's interesting about the Dominicans, and the modern day Dominicans don't like to talk about this too much, but they were heavily involved in both the Papal Inquisition and the Spanish Inquisition. And they were considered to be elite inquisitors and judges during this time. So they didn't do a lot of good stuff, I can tell you that, during these specific times. Now, another interesting piece that ties the Dominicans to these inquisitions, in the Spanish Inquisitions, they had a thing called auto de fe, and it means act of faith, and it actually was the act of burning a heretic. Well, here's what's really interesting. So in 1495, Ferdinand II, which we talked about, who was a big part of the Spanish Inquisitions, he actually commissioned for there to be a painting of Dominic to be presiding over auto de fe. Now, again, Saint Dominic was not even during this era. He was hundreds of years before that. But they tied the correlation of Saint Dominic, who started the Dominicans, with these Dominicans, who were these top inquisitors and these top judges during this time. So Ferdinand II basically was saying that the order that Saint Dominic started was the order that was going to serve justice throughout the land. And it, again, back to the fact that modern day Dominicans will get really mad and say that, I'm trying to tell you right now, Saint Dominic had nothing to do with the Inquisitions. Well, that's not necessarily true, because they'll say that he wasn't even alive during the Papal Inquisitions. Well, he was alive during the Episcopal Inquisitions, which were during 1184 to 1230s. And this was during the time that they were attacking the Gnostic Cathars and the Waldensians. Now, I'm going to do something on the Waldensians one day, but what's interesting about the Waldensians is they were kind of the proto of the Protestants, obviously, way before the Protestant Reformation, but they were very much against the Catholic Church, and they were all about giving money back to the people. As a matter of fact, the guy that started it, Peter Waldo, he was this wealthy merchant. He literally gave everything away. And he started this entire church based around the fact that they were trying to give back to the people. So Catholic Church didn't like that. They were trying to wipe these guys out during that time. And Saint Dominic was around during that time. He would have been a part of that. So it's just interesting that they try to act like that, oh, well, Saint Dominic had nothing to do with this, so that has nothing to do with our order. Well, it kind of does, because your order had everything to do with almost every single inquisition after that. And again, if we look at what kind of inquisitions that were going on during the time of Saint Dominic, it's pretty obvious that he would have at least been a part of or known about. And there's no way he wouldn't have been a part of it during this time, the Episcopal Inquisition. So again, the Dominicans have always been at the forefront of any kind of eradication by the Catholic Church. So I was talking about the ties to Gnosticism and the Dominicans. Well, where they get into this Christian mysticism idea is with St. Albertus Magnus, and he's also known as St. Albert the Great. And he was a philosopher, scientist, and a German Dominican friar. He's actually considered one of the greatest medieval philosophers and thinkers. And he taught that one cannot really know God with reason in mind, but can only know God through emotion and sensual experiences. That's super interesting, because I believe, and I think most Christians at the core believe, that you can understand God in both ways. Now, again, we're never going to understand God fully, not even a fraction, right? We understand that part of it, but he's making this an entire sensual, emotional experience. I think that's directly against what is said in the Bible. You can't go on your emotions alone. If you're riding on your emotions, you're now allowing yourself to be very susceptible to all kinds of negative influences, including negative entities and all of these different sensational experiences that can be misconstrued as something from God, but it ends up being something from a completely different source, even though it may be masquerading as something good. So he kind of was setting the basis for that in the Dominican belief system. And that was the thing with Magnus, and then what he was permeating into the Dominican order was a very vague representation of how we worship God. He basically was saying that you just surrender to a higher order and a higher authority. And while there's some truth to that, the problem is he's making this a sensual experience. And that was the problem, because it became all about love and it became all about the sensuality. And we see that even what we were talking about in the last episode with the Manichaeans. And that's kind of what Manny taught too. It's a very Gnostic ideology. And while I do completely adhere to the love of Christ, and I think that should be at the forefront of a lot of what we spread as Christians, there's also order as well. It's not chaotic love. There is an order to what God has given us and what we are supposed to share to our fellow man. And this is not at all what Magnus was teaching through the Dominicans. This was more of a willy-nilly sensual love, and you can see a myriad of problems that could come out of that. Also, I find it funny that they're teaching love, but simultaneously, they're doing what? Killing all these people in the Inquisitions for years. So it's like that classic mystery cult idea, right? It's all about the right interpretation. And if you know the right interpretation, then you can get into the inner ring. And the Dominicans operate very much like any other secret society. You have levels that you can go up through and you can achieve and you can get more knowledge. All of it's tied into these old orders. Again, they were trying to mimic the old Benedictine orders. So they would have had a very Gnostic basis to them from the get-go. And we were talking about St. Dominic was the first to bring the rosary to the forefront in Catholicism. Now, I know there are people that could argue that the rosary was started before him. It's not about if it did or not. It's about what the Catholic Church has put on the books as the person who brought the iconography to forefront, and that was St. Dominic. Matter of fact, guess what he said? The Blessed Virgin Mary gave it to him, showed it to him at the church at Pruya in France. She literally gave him a rosary. So here we are again with this divine feminine character who is handing a rosary to a person who is starting a Gnostic order that is integrating all throughout Catholicism. And I'm going to say something real quick, because I get hit up by people from time to time when I do episodes about Gnosticism, and specifically when I talk about the divine feminine. And they will always say, and these will be Christians too, these won't be Gnostic Christians, and they will say, hey man, I completely agree with your ideas against Gnosticism, but when it comes to the idea of the divine feminine, and when we're talking about the Holy Spirit who's in the Bible, it's way more nuanced than you think. There's a feminine aspect to all this. I'm here to tell you guys right now, that's not lost on me. And I promise you, I'm working on an episode to talk about that specifically. The issue is, I need to set a precedent beforehand about what this actual nefarious divine feminine character is before I can explore in the Bible biblically the feminine aspect of God. I can already hear some Christians right now who don't understand that part clenching right now and probably think, Joel's a Gnostic, I knew that he was. And clearly, if you haven't listened to me over the past 100 episodes that I put out, that's not the case, but it is more nuanced. So the people that are always hitting me up about it being more nuanced, promise guys, it's not lost to me. It's not lost to me at all. And I understand that aspect, but there is something to be said for exposing first, and then I'm going to come and do this. Because if I came with that first, then what are people going to say? Oh, Joel's this Gnostic and he's still involved in the occult and all these things. And that's not something I'm trying to promote either. So again, guys, not lost to me. I promise I've got something in the works right now where I'm going to go through that scripturally and show you how things operate in the structure of the Trinity. And there are some very, very interesting ideas there that I don't think is unbiblical in the slightest. And I do think that the Gnostic ideologies that have come out over the centuries were just a twisting of that. And they use it as a manipulative tool because they can point to the Bible and say, but see right here, and if you don't know scripture that well, and you don't understand the Koine Greek and the Hebrew, and you're not able to speak to that, then that's how a lot of people get deceived. And again, I know I just got off on a little rant, but I wanted to let people know that up front, that listen to the show, that have been hitting me up. I promise it's not lost on me, guys. Not in the slightest.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards. Free shipping with no minimum purchase. Triple points on two purchases and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
So, we jumped off onto the Dominicans here, but you're saying, wait a minute, we started with the Jacobins. Well, we had to divert there because we need to talk about how that the Jacobins took their name from the Dominicans in the first place, because the original origins of the Dominican order, when St. Dominic started it, the first base was actually established in Paris in 1218, and it was on the street of St. Jacques. And that's why that the Dominicans were called the Jacobins in Paris. So the Dominicans were first referred to as the Jacobins in Paris, and then the Jacobins of the French Revolution would start calling themselves, what, the New Club, and they would connect with this Dominican monastery of these original Jacobins, and they were essentially allowed to rent out not only that specific place, but several different monasteries, and they would set up shop during this time. And here's the best part. The Jacobins were wholly against the church. They were absolutely against all of the ideologies of the church. The Jacobins at the root core, and I've talked about the Jacobins on this show before, specifically when we were talking about Bloodlines of Jesus, and I've talked about them in regards to secret agent Aleister Crowley, because there were Jacobins that were integrated into the Order of the Golden Dawn, and he helped take out some of their plots that they were in league with the Carlists, and obviously go back and listen to those episodes. But the Jacobins, their whole goal is to restore the House of Stuart. And we've talked about the House of Stuart. We've talked about these bloodlines, and the House of Stuart is a big part of these bloodlines that also tie into the Merovingians. And this is what the Jacobins were trying to do. So we've got essentially a Gnostic order that called themselves the Jacobins after the Dominicans, who were the original Jacobins. But the Dominicans are Catholics who are, quote unquote, Christian group, but they're also Gnostic. But then you got the Jacobins who are touting themselves to be these revolutionaries who are trying to tear down the church. But yet the church is allowing them to stay in these monasteries and operate within them. This is what I've been telling you guys from the get-go of my show, is how that the Catholic Church has been operating for a long time, or at least groups within it. They create this chaos. They control, or these Gnostic groups who are behind the scenes are controlling a lot of these Gnostic cults while simultaneously controlling the church, and they're creating a facade of fighting each other, but they're actually funding all of it, and at the same time, they are moving forward their plans behind the scenes. And listen, it's the same way that things are operating now when it comes to global wars and fighting amongst different nations. It's just done differently now. Back then, it was more religion-based, whereas now, it's way more geopolitical, albeit we are getting, what, aliens in the mix now? And I, again, when it comes to that aspect of it, that's a very complex situation as far as exactly what's going on there. But I will say this, at the bottom of it, there's a spiritual component, and it's not good, no matter what you think they are. But again, it's just a different format, but it's all spiritual at the bottom. And this is exactly what's going on during this time with the Jacobins. They called themselves after a Gnostic order, which most people don't believe it's Gnostic, but clearly is. And they are Gnostic because they're trying to bring the House of Stuart back to the forefront, but yet the church doesn't like them, and they don't like the church on the outside. Chaos, pure chaos. And you're going to see more chaos in this episode when we get to Giuseppe Mazzini and the chaos he causes while simultaneously being funded by the groups that he is on the outside fighting. Another interesting nugget during the French Revolution, the Jacobins also used the former headquarters of, guess what, the Fortress of the Templars as their prison during the Reign of Terror, where they were committing all kinds of executions and murders during this time. And this was a big part of these inquisitions. And they used the Templar headquarters, the Fortress of the Templars, for their prison to operate that. So again, super tied in to the church and these Gnostic groups, but on the outside fighting the church. And another interesting connection that ties these Jacobins to all the groups that we've already talked about, the Knights of Malta had a member, and we talked about him, Formosa de Framo, and he was the Maltese nobleman who was the Dutch consulate. And he was an influential and powerful supporter of the Jacobins, as well as the French occupation of Malta. So the Jacobins are strangely tied, check this out now, to the Dominican order, which we talked about, as well as the Templars, because they're using the Templar fortress, the Knights of St. John of Jerusalem, aka the Knights of Malta, the Maltese Scottish Rite Freemasonic Lodges. All of these are connected. And as we're going to see here in a minute, the first godfather, Giuseppe Mazzini, was tied directly to Freemasonry. And I had somebody recently ask after the first episode that they didn't believe that the mafias were directly tied into Gnostic groups or occult groups, that maybe, you know, what I was setting up as a foundation, that, yeah, maybe their foundation was built on it, but they weren't directly tied to these groups. No, no, no. They're directly tied to these groups all the way to the modern time. And I'm going to show you that today. And I'm going to show you even with more of the modern stuff in the next episode, how that they have this weird relationship with Freemasonry, with a lot of these Gnostic groups. And it's not just the origins of them or their foundational origins. No, they work with these groups side by side. Now, that's not saying everybody that's in the Mafia is a part of Freemasonry or a part of something that would be considered Gnostic, right? But they were born of it. But a lot of the guys within there are, and you'll see that. And we'll talk about Giuseppe Mazzini here in a minute now. He is tied directly into Freemasonry. So in 1789, there's correspondence from the London Revolution Society to the founding of the Paris Jacobin Club. Now, the London Revolution Society was one of several radical societies in Britain in the 1790s. And from them comes Jacobitism. Now, Jacobitism is the movement, and they were trying to restore the exiled James II or any of his descendants of, guess what, the House of Stuart to the throne. So this is the idea of the modern Jacobins, and they created this Paris Jacobin Club. And this is how the Jacobins spread out throughout France. So this is important, though, that I brought up that the London Revolution Society directly inspired the founding of the Paris Jacobin Club, because the network that they built from that throughout France was built by British designs. So you got to think, you're in this French Revolution, they're anti-British, and they're trying to start this revolution, they're trying to be free, but the entire idea of the Jacobins was created by the British and British designs. And you'll see that throughout history, that revolutions are not necessarily wholesome at the core. I'm not saying all, but there is some sort of nefarious design behind a lot of it. And we could even talk about the American Revolution, that there were people who are a big part of helping create the New World. And I went into it in the Rosicrucian American series and how that the idea of starting this new world was all Rosicrucian designs from long before with John Dee and Sir Francis Bacon. So their ideas permeated all the way into building the new world and then starting this American Revolution. If we look, what's going on in DC? What's going on in a lot of the original colony cities? Tons of esoteric imagery, tons of Freemasonic and Rosicrucian imagery. The entire foundation of the United States is built on these things. And it's no different in any other type of revolution around the world. There are puppet masters, that are puppeting what looks to be a organic uprising from the people, but it's actually there to manipulate something greater, which we're going to talk about here as well. And to the point of Rosicrucianism, Rosicrucianism is a part of Jacobism as well, because Jacobism and these clubs, they grew directly out of literary groups. And one of those literary groups was the Royal Society of London. I've talked about the Royal Society in London an absolute ton and how that its roots were in Rosicrucianism. And again, I've talked about the Royal Society and how not everybody that was in the Royal Society, which was later, was a Freemason or a Rosicrucian, but a whole lot of them were. And most of the scholarly pursuits from these guys in this Royal Society were esoteric, and they spawned from the Invisible College, which was prior, which Robert Boyle was a part of, and we talked about several others. And the idea of the original Invisible College, which you talked about, was run as an esoteric society from these Rosicrucian Kabbalists. And we know that Sir Francis Bacon was a big part of helping set that up too. And again, this matriculated into the Dominican fronts, which were a part of the Benedictine orders too. So you've got this early Renaissance period and then all of these different groups that seemingly don't seem like they connect are all connecting behind the scenes. And this is, in essence, what the Jacobins spawned from, a lot of these literary groups of these esoteric minds. And here's what's also interesting about the Jacobins and how that they were set up and ran by the British, but they would do the complete opposite of what the British were touting on this end, and specifically completely against the church or against people who had bright minds, who were intelligent, because a part of this French Revolution, they had over 40,000 executions of artists and scientists. I mean, some of the brightest minds during that time, Anton Lavoisier, and he was the father of modern chemistry. We had Marquis de Condorcet, and he was a known philosopher and political scientist. And he was a big champion of human rights and equality for all people and public education. And the Jacobins were executing these people who could help. And they were saying that, oh, because they're part of this elite class, we got to wipe them all out. So again, they weren't actually creating a revolution for the people. They were just creating chaos to really keep the British in power. And that's what the British were trying to do at the time, was make sure that they had their puppet strings on all these different countries. And think about it. This legacy of bright minds, intelligent people who could actually help the people around them, that was the legacy that the Jacobins burned down. And if you think about it, that was just a masterful ruse. And this upheaval and this war that was caused was all just to take out some of these bright people who could actually help people become free from the regime that was puppeteering all of these different countries behind the scenes. Now, I want to look at Jeffrey Steinberg, and he's an investigative journalist, author, and he was a longtime counterintelligence director for Executive Intelligence Review. And he wrote an essay called The Bestial British Intelligence of Shelburne and Bentham. And he states, from the outset, the Jacobin Terror was a British East India Company, British Foreign Office orchestrated affair. The bloody massacre of France's scientific elite was systematically carried out by French hands, manning French guillotines, but guided by British strings. So even he states that because of what the British were trying to do, what they wanted to do, they wanted to take out French's scientific elite and the brightest minds, because they knew that they would be the biggest opposition against what they were trying to pull off, specifically with the East India Company and how much they were basically just taking over the world. Now, we were talking about Shelburne and Bentham, and we want to talk about Bentham, Jeremy Bentham. And he was an English philosopher, jurist, and social reformer, and he was regarded as the father of modern utilitarianism. But it gets better with Jeremy Bentham. So check this out. So during this political chaos that's going on, all this insurrection, we've got the Jacobins creating this Jacobin terror in France. Speeches were actually prepared by Bentham and were translated and transported by diplomatic pouch and other means to Paris. And then they were given to some of the top orators of the Jacobins, and they would deliver these fiery oratories to keep people all jacked up and keep causing this chaos. What's interesting, too, about this is there's proof. There are records of East India Company payments to these leading Jacobins, and they're still on file at the British Museum. So Bentham is literally writing the speeches for the Jacobins to the Jacobins to then fire people up to go against what the British are for and go against the British in general. So it's basically funding the chaoticness to do what? wipe out the people who would actually be a threat to Britain. That was the whole point. And we're going to talk about Giuseppe Mazzini here in a second. He's a big part of all this chaos that's being caused too. So from all this chaos that's caused by the British would succeed in ensuring what? The failure of the French Revolution. And it would end with the crowning of Napoleon as emperor. And they would successfully preserve their own monarchy and world empire. So essentially, starting the chaos, they took out any of the bright minds that could go against them. And then ultimately, through all the chaos, they pulled out the big W anyway. Now, we want to talk about another character that's going to tie directly into Giuseppe Mazzini, a Lord Palmerston, Henry John Temple, and he was a British Anglo-Irish politician, and he served as Prime Minister of the UK from 1855 to 1858, and then again from 1859 to his death in 1865. And he was known as a disciple of who? Jeremy Bentham, who we just talked about. And he was essentially a part of the cabinet in Great Britain for about 35 years in various different positions. And it's funny, there is a famous saying that the Viennese schoolboys used to say about Palmerston. They said, if the devil has a son, surely it is Lord Palmerston, because Palmerston was only there to do one thing, and it was to make London the undisputed center of the new worldwide Roman Empire. That was the entire point. And he wanted to reduce all these other nations to the role of puppet, client, or fall guy for British imperial policy. So that's why it was said that if the devil has a son, surely it is Lord Palmerston, because Palmerston, again, is not a great guy, but you will see his own connection to Giuseppe Mazzini, who was the original godfather. So another interesting thing is, during the Napoleonic Wars, the British actually conquered most of the world outside of Europe and obviously the United States. And the French at that point are just a tool for them to use any way they want to. A big exception was Russia, and Lord Palmerston was preparing to invade Russia during the Crimean War, which was about 3 years later from these Napoleonic Wars. Now, he links up with Napoleon III, and Napoleon III, he was the son of Louis Bonaparte, the King of Holland, and the nephew of Napoleon, Emperor of France. And here's a little side note about Napoleon III. He was not an active member in Freemasonry, but he did establish strict authoritarian control over the Grand Orient de France during that time. As a matter of fact, he allowed Freemasonry to operate as long as he had people installed within the Grand Orient to control it. One of those was his cousin, Prince Murat, and he was actually elected the Grand Master in 1852. Now, some people think that Napoleon III and even the Napoleon, his uncle, were actually Freemasons just off the book Freemasons because of a lot of the imagery and the paintings that are painted with a lot of Freemasonic hand gestures and symbolism, in that they distanced themselves from the actual group, but obviously allowed it to operate. And then they had family members who were integrated into Freemasonry to control, quote unquote, the group, but in actuality, the group was controlling these countries.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And I only bring up the connection with Napoleon III and Freemasonry and even Louis Napoleon Bonaparte and the uncle of Napoleon III, the Napoleon, who was also connected to Freemasonry, because we're going to talk about Giuseppe Mazzini being tied into it as well, because via Napoleon. And it's very important because they all have this weird through where they'll be butting heads on the surface, acting like they don't like each other. But at the same time, these same secret societies they're connected with, plus they're both getting funded by the same people, which we'll discover how the British are funding all sides. So let's get to Giuseppe Mazzini. And he was an Italian politician, lawyer, journalist, philosopher, and political activist. And he worked for the unification of Italy. He was a major leader of the Italian revolutionary movement. And he was involved with a lot of different, quote unquote, revolutions. Some he, quote unquote, won. Several he, quote unquote, lost. But what we'll discover today is those wins and losses were all wins for the right people, or in our case, the wrong people, because we don't want these people to win, but they continually do. And that was Giuseppe Mazzini's role in this. And it's funny. You can go to Wikipedia and go to any of these mainstream places, and they tout him as this revolutionary, that he was there for the people, that he was there for the Italians. And it actually makes me think about what was going on over here in the United States with Joseph Colombo. And he was one of the five families. And in the 1970s, he founded the Italian American Civil Rights League, and he claimed that he was going to fight anti-Italian stereotypes. And he made this big deal about the FBI, who were trying to legitimately take down the mafia, but he said that they were targeting Italians and saying they all were mafia, and he was acting like the mafia didn't exist, even though he was one of the heads of the five families. And he was the big shot. He was out in the open. He was touting himself as a revolutionary. All of the Italian Americans believed he was a revolutionary, and he would hold these massive meetings in the streets of New York with thousands of Italians there. And he actually got shot, and he was paralyzed because of being shot at one of these rallies, and ended up dying several years later because of it. But it's a perfect example of a modern version of what Giuseppe was also that far back. And it's a very mafia thing to do. I'm going to tout myself as a political activist and say that I'm for the people, but I'm going to use said thing to achieve my own goals within the mafia, which, by the way, Colombo was extorting tons of people during that time while he was saying he was helping the Italian Americans, and he was embezzling a ton of money through his political activism as well. And same thing with Giuseppe Mazzini, no different. And what's funny is even modern historians who tout that Giuseppe Mazzini was this revolutionary, they're baffled by his methods because his reliance on secret revolutionary groups and these uprisings led to repeated failures and repression. And a lot of historians argue that his refusal to compromise with the monarchy at the time made his goals hard to achieve, which did not help the Italians to unify, which you're going to find out today, he never wanted them to unify. He was getting paid by the British to cause the chaos, become this godfather, but to make sure that he had failures where they needed him to have failures. And we're going to get into this interesting Freemasonic connection with Giuseppe Mazzini. So Giuseppe Mazzini was a very effective terrorist, essentially. And he had massive operations. His Young Italy and many of the spinoffs from Young Italy that went throughout the world, these groups were precursors to the mafia, or were a part of the mafia, or had people who came from the Camorra or a part of the Camorra. And here's an interesting tie really quick before we get into this Freemasonic thing. His father was a physician to guess who? Queen Victoria's father. So there's already your British connection with Mazzini there. And Mazzini, for a while, he worked for the Carbonari. Now, the Carbonari was an informal network of secret revolutionary societies active in Italy from about 1800 to 1831, and they were known to influence revolutionary groups in France, Brazil, Uruguay, Russia, Portugal, and on the surface, they touted this patriotism, but they never really had any sort of immediate political agenda that you could point to. So it kind of makes sense that Giuseppe Bozzini was a part of a group that caused chaos but didn't really have an in-game goal. Here's what's interesting, though. The Gabinari were a direct offshoot of Freemasonry. They came out of one of Napoleon's Freemasonic fronts. So here's your connection to Napoleon and trickling into Napoleon III and people who directly butted heads against the ideals of Giuseppe Mazzini, and they're all tied together. We've got this Gabinari, this Freemasonic group that starts these revolutionary societies, quote-unquote secret societies, and Giuseppe Mazzini's a part of it. So he's essentially a part of a Freemasonic started group. So here's just another connection to Gnosticism, to occultism, to Freemasonry, into and integrated into the Sicilian Mafia and all of the other mafia organizations that we've seen so far. And again, it's funny, Mazzini was just like the Jacobins, and he was wholly against the Catholic Church and the papacy, and he believed that there was no individual human soul. He believed there's only a collective soul, and that we all needed to work, and he would put them in racial groups too, which is just eugenics 101, but that was his idea of what he thought it was. But he believed that each modern nation, and sometimes even racially, what he would mean by these nations, that each one had a specific mission. But here's the best part. There was only one monarchy that he supported. And guess what that was? Queen Victoria, the British. So here we got a guy who's trying to quote unquote free Italy, but yet he is working, and you're going to see here in a second, getting paid directly by the British to cause all this trouble. And what he was doing was preaching an Italian revolution for the Third Rome. So he said, after the Rome of the Caesars and the Rome of the Popes comes the Rome of the people. But this all goes back to this collective soul, not individual soul. He's taking individualism away. You just need to all work as a bunch of lemmings and drones. And this is how we're going to operate this country. Again, really no semblance of what he wanted to achieve, because he never wanted to achieve anything. This was just to cause chaos. Now, his Young Italy gangs did force Pope Pius IX to flee from Rome to Naples in 1848. So again, he had some wins that were on the books as far as what he was trying to promote. And even from March to June of 1849, right after that, he ruled the Papal States as one of three dictators. And guess what all those dictators were? Grand Orient Freemasons. So here we are with the Freemasonic ties to the Sicilian Mafia directly through Giuseppe Mazzini. And he had death squads that operated in Rome, Ancona, and other cities. He sacked tons of churches. He was super anti-Christianity. As a matter of fact, in 1849, for Easter, he staged a mock Eucharist in the Vatican, and he called this the Novum Pascha, and he featured himself as God and the people. So what's also interesting was he was planning to set up his own Italian national church on the Anglican model. Even though he said he hated Christianity, he was still going to use Christianity as a way to control people. Listen, it's so intricate what these guys are doing and how they twist Christianity. Listen, I know for the person who's an historian or who loves studying the esoteric arts and Gnosticism and all of these interesting things, right? If you're not grounded in Christianity, when you look at these things just from an historical standpoint and you say, this is Christianity, that's bad, then you have this idea of why you believe that Christianity is bad. Not realizing that the enemy infiltrates Christianity all the time to twist it and turn it into something evil. So you have these people with power who are twisting this religious ideology of Christianity. Even Giuseppe Mazzini, who says he hates it, he's like, well, I'm still going to start up a church that the people can go to, that we can control in. And this is where people get that idea of Christianity's like all religions and it's going to control us. You got to wake up, man. You got to wake up. I think the true waking up is understanding the layers behind all of that. Because once you start seeing all these layers behind it and all the machinations and the wheels moving, Christianity's not fake. It's just that the enemy came in real quick and started manipulating things over the past 2,000 plus years to create this facade of it being wrong, of it being evil, and we've lost sight of what it actually was supposed to be all along. So after Mazzini comes in and he's ruling one of these papal states here for a little bit after one of his wins, obviously, like I said, he's got some wins and losses. He ends up getting run out by Louis Napoleon, and he runs back to Great Britain. And the best part is, Louis Napoleon and Mazzini were both on the payroll of the British. So Mazzini, who is fighting Napoleon, is also getting paid by the British, and so is Napoleon. So the British are manipulating both of them. Well, I think that they're both very knowledgeable about what's happening, and it's just a pure chaotic game that they're playing. But he runs back and hides in Great Britain, and this is where it also gets interesting. So I want to look at a guy called Webster Tarpley, and he was an American historian, political writer, and commentator, and he studied at Princeton University and later at the University of Turin. And he did some really interesting work on Giuseppe Mazzini, and he talks about him being a key figure in the 19th century revolutionary networks tied to British geopolitical interests, what we're talking about here. So he did some lectures like Palmerston Zoo and Palmerston's London during the 1850s. And in one of his analysis, he writes, Mazzini is in London enjoying the support of Lord Ashley, the Earl of Shaftesbury, a Protestant fanatic who also happens to be Lord Palmerston's son-in-law. Mazzini's direct access to the British government payroll comes through James Stansfield, a junior Lord of the Admiralty and a very high official of British intelligence. So he basically states that when Mazzini goes back on the run, goes back to Great Britain, he's in league with all of the big names. And he is connected with a guy who's connected to Lord Palmerston, who's his son-in-law. And he's getting paid directly by British intelligence. So just another example of Giuseppe Mazzini, who's supposed to be this Italian revolutionary who is actually getting funded by the British to use that to cause chaos to keep the British in control. And that was kind of Palmerston's whole goal to start with. He wanted to control the narrative and wanted to make sure that the British were kept in power and would just essentially turn these countries or keep them as puppet states. And that was his policy. He wanted to keep Italy turbulent, and he didn't want to make her powerful, which would harm England if she was. And Mazzini's role in Italy was been that of what? A wrecker, a terrorist, an assassin. And he had all of these brainless dupes that were a part of Young Italy and essentially the mafia, which we're going to talk about. And he would just send them to their deaths in these terrorist attacks. And he was always hiding out. He would always just get away. He would always be just a step ahead. Well, yeah, you're a step ahead when you're in league with both ends of the government and you're playing a chess game that no one else is playing. And what's really interesting is that Mazzini played a huge role in making sure that the first Italian War for Independence was a complete failure. But what do modern historians say about him? They write and say that he was a Republican who committed his entire life to the Italian unification independence, which wasn't true. When in reality, he was doing everything he could to prevent Italian unity, to even get to when unity comes, which was 20 years from the chaos that Giuseppe was starting when he said he was trying to create unity. It actually came in the form of highly centralized state dominated by, guess who? Grand Orient Freemasons. So they caused the chaos. to the point that people are ready for order, and then they bring in the order by the Grand Orient of Freemasons. The people that are in control are all a part of this Freemasonic group. So again, create the chaos, bring in order, and the order is actually the big bad evil, but even the people that are creating the chaos are also a part of that same evil. It's just history repeating itself. But Giuseppe Mazzini, who started this Italian mafia, this Sicilian mafia, this is where he figured out how that he would use people to gain power and also control political regimes as well. And we talked about in the last episode how the Camorra was a direct offshoot of the Gardunia, how that the Camorra gave birth to what? A new society called the Sicilian Mafia. Now, we want to find this connecting link between the Camorra and the Mafia, and this connecting link is Giuseppe Mazzini. And how this connection started with the Camorra integrating into this Sicilian Mafia, and how that Giuseppe Mazzini had this, or he was the bridge between the two. In 1859, and this was a year before the Italian Revolution, the Bourbon police discovered that the Camorra Mafia Brotherhood was conducting what? Espionage for the Revolutionary Alliance headed by King Victor Emmanuel II of Sardinia. And the Republicans, Garibaldi and Gesù Mazzini, were a part of this. And we talked about how that 300 of the Camorra rank and file, they were rounded up, put into prison, but they end up getting out and they start raining terror. But these Camorrists were tied in directly to Mazzini, because Mazzini was a part of funding and moving with this Camorra Mafia Brotherhood that was causing espionage in this Revolutionary Alliance. Now, we talked about Giuseppe being part of the Carbonari, which was an offshoot from Freemasonry that spawned out of Napoleon. Because of his Carbonari activities, he was imprisoned by the French in 1830. Now, he got out in 1831, and that's when he organized the Young Italy Society. And it different from the Carbonari because he pushed for youth. He wanted impressionable youth, and that's was his goal, to build up youth into this secret society or mafia, whatever you want to call it. It was kind of his, one of his early societies that he built. And obviously it was looked at as a revolutionary group, but that's not really what it was, because he used them as assassins. And you may ask, what is the direct tie to Mazzini being this godfather? Outside of starting Young Italy, outside of running with the Carbonari, outside of running with the Camorrists, outside of being a godfather-like character who was working for the British, but simultaneously saying that he's starting this Italian revolution for freedom when he actually wasn't. He was causing chaos. You know, he's got all the characteristics of a godfather, but where do we get the idea that he was the first godfather? And where do we get the idea that he was the one that created the word mafia? Well, there's no direct evidence of him being the father of the mafia, but there's articles of the organization of Young Italy that show that he and the Brotherhood societies had common interests and common attitude. So in Article 30, it states that those who refuse obedience to the orders of this secret society or reveal its mysteries die by the dagger without mercy. So clearly, in the articles of Young Italy, they said that they were a secret society. But we know that the tenets there match up with the tenets of the Camorra and go back to the Gardunia. And obviously, if we look at groups like the Cosa Nostra that came later, they have very similar ideologies. If we look at Articles 31 and 34, they provide a judicial process identical to that of the Camorra. States, the secret tribunal of Young Italy pronounces sentence and appoints affiliated members for its execution. The secret tribunal consisted of Mazzini and his chief of captains. In the Camorra, the tribunal consisted of the Grand Master and the family bosses. So he is connecting his role, Mazzini, as being the head over the chief of captains, or as we would consider in the Camorra, the capos, but he attributes it to the tribunal of the Camorra with the Grand Master. So here we have this other connection in one of the articles of Young Italy that Mazzini started, where he is stating that his role at the top of the chiefs of Young Italy is the exact same thing as the what? Grand Master of the Camorra. So here we are again with the Grand Master. Here we are again with the secret society talk. And for anyone that's saying that the mafia was not directly connected to these Gnostic groups, to these secret societies, I don't know what to tell you right now. We're looking at direct articles from the first Godfather himself, who's telling you that his role over these chiefs of Young Italy, this secret society, is the exact same thing as the Camorra and being a grandmaster. And there's also six other articles of Young Italy, and they talk about the prohibition of members' wives and that you have a code that you can't mess around with any of your brother's wives. As a matter of fact, that is a code in Freemasonry as well. That's something that you swear that you won't do. It's also talked about in the 1840s that Mazzini had close relations with the actual Camorra as well, and he was assisted by the Camorra in a brief revolution in Naples in 1846. Again, jumping around these revolutions, starting chaos. And in this revolution, he created an elite murder society. No one knows what the name of this murder society is, but he created this elite murder society. And he gave written orders stating at the first sortie, each band should attack and kill the known centurions, which is the auxiliary papal police in the locality, and all the known enemies of the Federation should be killed. It will not be a bad plan for every congregation to make a list of those enemies. Our men will respect religion, but they will kill without any pity. Presets whom they fin at the head of the centurions, the houses of the centurions and of the such seditious priests will be set on fire. Now, one of the interesting things about that quote, which is said to be a quote from Mazzini, it shows up in 19th century Catholic and anti-Mazzinian publications that were intercepted from revolutionary federation cells during the Roman Revolution. So it is said that Mazzini wrote this, but we don't have the definitive proof. But from all indications of what was written, it looks like it was Mazzini that wrote this. But again, there's this possibility that, hey, it was just anti-Mazzinian gooblygook that somebody else wrote and said it was him. But he was a good dude, so I lean more to the fact this probably was him. And we've got another really interesting connection to the Sicilian Mafia, Mazzini, and the Camorra. So this is a really good contemporary source that links the Mafia to the 1860 Revolution. And it was a notorious Camorrist called Cracco Donatelli. And in 1872, he was actually tried for 74 murders. Now, in his defense, he said he was the product of, you know, a violent environment. And he's telling his whole life's history about why he became who he was. But he did say in 1859, he and other Camorrists joined the troops of Garibaldi and guess who? Mazzini. And he said that the Revolutionary Army was captained by a brigand chief. So all these 42 criminal bands, they were run by these essentially capos. And he said about a third of these criminal companies were organized by Mazzini in Sicily. So he said directly that the Camorra was connected to Mazzini, and he was a big part of the Camorra himself. And Mazzini's criminal enterprise was much larger than people actually knew. So this revolutionary was a crime boss all along. So let's talk about the word mafia. You know, it's been a puzzle for a lot of people trying to figure it out. Now, it was originally associated with revolutionary activity, which we've been talking about, but it also burst into public notice in the year 1860, and the name's not known to appear in any document before that. The first person to connect Mazzini directly to founding the Mafia was A. Vizzini in his book La Mafia, and it was published in Rome in 1880. Now, Vizzini's theory was expanded upon by Heckethorn, and we talked about Heckethorn in the series. And he asked, what is the meaning of the word mafia and whence comes it? The invention is attributed to Mazzini. It certainly was unknown before 1859 or 1860, the time when that agitator made his appearance in Sicily. It's well known that he had no faith in any class of society except its very dregs, and his having formed the vagabonds and thieves who then swarmed all over Sicily into a secret society of its own seems well borne out of facts. So what he's basically saying is that the idea of the mafia doesn't even show up until Mazzini hits the scene and he's creating all this chaos. And his idea of chaos was telling the lowest of the low that they needed to take out the people who were in power, or not really the people in power, but so much people who were more well off than them. So he would target people who were intelligent or might be actually good people, but were of a higher standing than the lowest of the low. And yet the people who are in real power never got touched. And the other allegation against Mazzini is that he formed a secret society called the Oblanica. And the word was coined by Mazzini from two different Latin words. The first word is obolus, which means a spit, and nico, which means I beckon. And if you bring the words together, which is Oblanica, it means I beckon with a spit. And within this Oblanica, he creates a more interior group that is called the Mafiosi, or Mafia, and they are composed from the initials M-A-F-I-A, and that stands for Mazzini, Autorice, Forti, Incendi, and Avvelenamenti. And that means Mazzini authorizes thefts, arsons, poisoning. So that's where the idea of mafia comes from. It stands for Mazzini authorizes theft, arson, and poisoning. So from all indications, Mazzini is the one who started the word mafia, created the Sicilia Mafia, which was connected to the Camorra, which we talked about on the last episode. We know that Mazzini was tied into the British. He was working for the British while simultaneously acting like that he was causing a revolution. Today, we talked about the Dominicans, who were a Gnostic Catholic group, from all indications, that trickled into the Jacobins. And the Jacobins were also part of all of this revolutionary chaos that was going on. And again, it's all about chaos, the order out of chaos, and the tenets of any secret society. And again, I've proven today that even out of Mazzini's own mouth in the articles of Young Italy, he talks about that Young Italy is a secret society, that his place within the mafia is the same as the Grand Master, the same Grand Master that goes all the way back to the Templars. All right, guys, I had a great time today. I can't wait to get into the next episode because we get into more of the modern stuff where you can see where some of the modern groups are working side by side with some of these nefarious Freemasons, and they are working within these lodges to create all kinds of chaos in the world today. All right, guys, I'll see you next time. All right, that is the end of our episode today. Don't forget, if you're not already following the show, make sure you hit that follow button on whatever platform you are on. Also, make sure you give the show 5 stars on Spotify, and if you're on Apple, 5 stars and a review would be much appreciated since it helps the show get to more ears around the world. Okay, guys, on the way out, we're going to play my song, Gray. And you know what it is, guys. Go outside, touch grass, and get your tail out the hole.
I'm trying to be me, but every time I do, they point their fingers at me. Sometimes I wanna scream. I can't fit within their kaleidoscope of what they want me to believe. But I can't fade to black. But I can't fade to black. It's all in the say my family's on my mind. That don't mean I don't care. It's just sometimes I feel stretched thin, and I know that isn't fair. But I can't fade to black. But I can't fade to black. It's all in the grind. Skills can't balance the way. Colors bleed out the frame. Black and white on the side. It's all in the grind. Skills can't balance the way. Colors bleed out the frame. Black and white on the side. It's all in the grind. It's all in the grind. It's all in the grind. I'm trying to be me, but every time I do, they point their fingers at me.
What's up, Oos? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.